If you're inspired by today's episode and want to get more involved in building equitable spaces for women of color in tech, business, and leadership, visit us at latinasb2b.com. Welcome to Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom, where wisdom comes from everywhere. This is a podcast about generational wisdom shared to help build a bridge for future generations and to build stronger communities through education, technology, and health. Welcome to Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. Hola, hola, and welcome to Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. My name is Teresa Gonzalez, and today we're going to talk about the business of free. What does free mean? It's free for you to use. It's free and easy and accessible on your phone. And in an era of relentless political messaging, algorithm-driven platforms, and AI-manipulated content, one Latina creator, she is really helping the community cut through all the noise. Her name is Sylvia Salazar, founder of Tono Latino, and she's on a mission to make U.S. politics more accessible and relatable for Spanish-speaking and bilingual audiences who have long been underserved by mainstream media. Now, WhatsApp isn't just popular with Latinos. It's pretty dominant through our community. Over half of all Hispanic Americans use WhatsApp regularly, and that's compared to just 16% of white Americans, and that's according to Pew Research. For Latino families, WhatsApp isn't just social media. It's a telecom infrastructure, and it's the lifeline to family members back home in Latin America. But why? Why is it that we use this platform? Latinos are the second largest voting demographic in the U.S. So let's take that in the back of our mind for a second in sharing information. And yet they remain one of the most targeted and least protected communities on these apps to protect them from misinformation, especially on platforms like WhatsApp. So Sylvia is a first-gen Latina with a background in computer engineering, and she saw how easy it was in misleading these narratives to infiltrate her family chats and social circles. And rather than ignore it, she leaned into her digital skills and cultural fluency to create content that resonates and educates and empowers us. So join me today in welcoming Sylvia Salazar of Tono Latino. Hola, hola, Sylvia. Welcome, Sylvia, and I'm very excited to have you on the show today and to have the discussion about the election and what we can do about misinformation and how to use our platforms.
Thank you for having me. This is definitely a topic of passion of mine. So you already gave a little bit of a teaser that I'm a computer engineer, I'm an immigrant, I'm a mother, and that last piece is really important to mention because it was one of the main reasons I think that propelled me to jump into this thing that I knew nothing about. I think when you become a parent, sometimes you will do things you never thought you would do because of your children. And I never saw myself as someone who would become interested in political activism. But the problem is what you mentioned, the 2016 election happened, and I decided that I needed to do whatever was necessary to make a better world for my child, even if that meant being uncomfortable in unfamiliar territory. But you and I have discussed this a little bit before meeting for this recording, that as Latinas in technology, a lot of it is uncharted territories. There's familiarity in the unknown and in the uncharted territory part. So it's like, well, if I figured that out, I'm sure I can figure this out, or at least I'm going to try. And especially, I'm going to try it for my kid. And the 2016 election woke a lot of people up. And what it did for me was make me go and look at the data. And I was floored when right after the election, I looked at the data for the Latino voter turnout. And it had below 50% for the last six elections, including 2016. We are a huge block of population. How is it possible that we have low turnout rates, like below 50%? And then you start connecting the dots and realize, oh, it's not so crazy when there's no organizations talking to Latinos, when nobody's talking to Latinos. There were very few media outlets besides the traditional Univision and Telemundo that were very just old school, to be honest, or people like my father that would sit at 5 p.m. to watch Jorge Ramos. And digital natives and other people that are younger than me are watching things on demand on their phones, like you mentioned, and these things were not reaching them where they were, which was the phone. And even if they went to these media outlets to try to understand what was happening, especially in Spanish, the language was very confusing. Like, if you need to pull out a dictionary to understand what they're saying, that already tunes you out. When you feel dumb because you can't follow the article, it's frustrating. And I don't know why I had this like, well, I'm going to go solve this problem. And I decided, well, I'm going to just break down what's happening and how it affects us, especially our community, in a way that sounds or that feels like, hey, you came over for my coffee, to my house to have some coffee. And Teresa, we need to talk about what happened. I had even people reach out like, hey, you need like this formal desk. And like, they wanted me to have something that looked like a studio, like a Telemundo studio with an anchor desk and all these things. I'm like, no, that is totally not the feeling that I want to give. I want to give you the feeling that you came over to my house for cafecito and I'm going to give you all the things and you know that I have receipts. If I tell you something, I have a source, a reputable source that backs it up. All you need to know is that I did the research and I summarized it for you.
No, and that's perfect because that's what everybody's doing right now on social platforms. It's all over the place, to be honest. But the one thing I want to clarify here is why we're talking about this is because of the misinformation. Now, there's two points here that I want to make to the audience. And thank you for joining us today, everybody, coming into this, is that you and I, we are older generations, not by much. I am a multi-generational third generation Latina that was born in California. You are an immigrant from Colombia that waited 14 years to get here. We are both on a mission to really help community understand what the voting, what technology does, and then the services and everything that we benefit from in this country. From a family perspective, I have no family. You have a family, but yet we voted the same way. Now, Paola Ramos, right? You mentioned her dad. You know, the older generation sits in front of the television at 5 o'clock and they listen to him, but she's now on the social platforms breaking it down by how these multi-generational families and communities are voting. And it is all based on how the social media drives our thinking process. She does mention this in one aspect, but where it comes down to is the alignment to where we think we are safe. And as we are finding out today, nobody is safe, right? Nobody is safe. And there was this realization that if they voted for this person, their communities would not be targeted. They are targeted. We knew that DACA and all the other services that a lot of community members, civil rights that have been put in place to save a lot of this service and practically the trajectory of where a lot of us are today, right? Including you to have a pathway into immigration, sees the benefits of all of us working together. Now, where does it break down? I want to get this clarified because in Paola Ramos's book, Defectors, which if none of you have read it, and I have invited her on this show, and hopefully we will get her on the show to break it all down for us. But what it comes down to is a colonial mindset. The other thing is how we see ourselves in this society versus immigrant. We are different than those people, othering people in our other community. And, you know, I've experienced that too with not speaking Spanish, right? And it's like, well, you're just a bocha or you're a white girl. You sound like a white girl. Why I'm bringing it up? It has to go away because we are aligned to a value of having safety for our communities. That is just the bare minimum at this point. And how do we align to other communities, specifically the Black community? You know, where can we find our power together? Because Black and Brown communities back in the 60s were really united against what was happening in civil rights. And that's where we got to a lot of our services today. And this is the sad part, is we've become siloed again because of the division, and it is all based around social media and misinformation. I really, truly believe that, A, because I worked at Facebook and Google. I saw the representation of who was where and what in leadership. And then after leaving, what happened, right? So I want to talk about your contribution to these platforms and kind of changing that dynamic, Sylvia, because you started out as a what we call grassroots voter, postcard writing, you know, out to community members. Was that in Spanish or was that in English or both?
Before that, what I started doing was I was not using social media the way I am today, these platforms. What I was doing was creating a Spanish newsletter that I would send out daily with a summary of what's going on and how it would affect people, especially Latino community. Now, later, about almost a year after I started this, I met with a mentor who sat me down and said, Sylvia, you need to do video. Like, you need to stop your newsletter because Latinos watch way more video than any other demographic across the board. At the time, TikTok didn't exist, but it was Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. And I was like, you're insane. Like, I'm not. Imposter syndrome, like, was at level 100 at the time. And he challenged me and he's like, no, you are going to do this. If you don't post a video by today at 6 p.m., you will donate to this man's reelection campaign. And I react to these challenges. So by 5:55, I had two videos posted looking like a deer in headlights because I was like, there's no way in hell that I'm going to do this. Now, I started. It was very uncomfortable. Back to our, okay, we're going to try this. We're uncomfortable. We don't know what we're doing. But it is true. Latinos watch way more video than any other demographic. If you look at the numbers, it's incredible. The only, I believe, the latest numbers that I saw, the only platform where we are slightly below at position number two is on Facebook, where we come after the white population. So I started doing video. At the beginning, it was in Spanish. Now, again, back to our learnings of the first Trump administration versus the second Trump administration. I learned the hard way how difficult it can be to cover anything that is happening real time. Because by the time I write my script or get the bullet points to record my video, something is happening. So I sit and record. By the time I edit the video, it has completely changed. It's like being on a, you know, mechanical bull. So then you got to start all over again. So then you have to figure out a way to give information, enough information so that people know what's happening without all the little details and minutiae that might change that will make that video obsolete. And that is tricky, but at least, you know, I learned something.
So let me go back to another point here with you, Sylvia. Tell us about how you decided to up your game in this new election, because like you said, both of us together from 2016, we were really trying to figure out how to use our platforms to educate the community. Everything is sped up very fast. These guys are playing chess. They have an execution plan on 90 days, and we're trying to fight fire with, you know, like a mister. You know what I mean? It's like, how do we all become the fire hose together?
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I'm sure if anybody has been following what's happening in the media landscape with content creators, aka influencers, you really saw a big push in 2024. Myself included. Like, I cranked the volume up to 1,000. Partly, it's because for the first time ever, after I had been doing this for 7 years, this is my 8th year doing this, but the last year, 7 years, organizations finally approached me to create videos about topics that I was already creating topics about. So it wasn't anything that I wouldn't already cover, but they were going to pay me to put information out there. This happened to a lot of creators across the board, not just political creators like me, but a lot of it was to inform the public about different things. One of my favorite videos, for example, that I did was about informing people of an announcement that Biden had done with regards to the Supreme Court, asking for the Supreme Court to have a code of ethics and like all these things. So those are topics that I already cover, but now you're going to pay me. So that is, number one, an encouragement to keep going, and also allows me, by the way, to hire, for example, an editor to help me with things, because otherwise I'm just doing everything on my own. The problem is that on the right, they had been doing this for the last 4 years with all sorts of content creators. And you've probably seen the reports that are starting to come out of how the right used media across the board, not just the social media Instagrammers and TikTokers, but also gamers who stream when they're gaming on Twitch, people who run Discord services for chats, people on podcasts of all kinds that reached hundreds of millions of people. But it wasn't just political content. It was, for example, Teresa and I just talking about technology every week, and then we insert a little bit of nugget of knowledge about how technology is weaponized for one thing or another. It becomes a little bit of a political conversation without this being political from the get-go. So the left was already 4 years behind. And organizations that run these creator programs will tell you that a huge percentage of the money that came in to hire the creators came in Q3. So very late in the game. At that point, there's very little that we can do. There were a lot of us working on different ways to get the message out there, but we cannot compete with communities that have been built for 4 years. So now I do have a series in Spanish called Metiche. So for anybody that doesn't know what Metiche doesn't mean, it means somebody who's a snoop, like the snoops and stuff. So I pretend to have a conversation with a friend, like Teresa, ¿tú escuchaste lo que pasó? And like, I'm giving you this gossip, and then you are the Metiche, the gossiper that is like listening in to the conversation. And I'm telling you, the Supreme Court did this and this and this and this and this. So it's a different style, but it's a way of informing the audience in a way that doesn't feel so heavy of a lecture of me giving you this like point by point thing that's super boring.
So I want to talk about that a little bit, because I was at South by Southwest and I learned a lot about the creator economy in a way that, you know, I've been to a lot of, not a lot of conferences, but I've been in some rooms at other conferences that are talking about media and content. And this was very prolific for me to understand that, just what you mentioned, a lot of content creators during this election season were actually paid. So what that told me, right, is that these companies have funds to pay influencers, right? To pay influencers to get content out. And specifically, it's either a brand or the content that they're pushing or whatever it is. The bottom line to me, what I got out of that, is they are using their community to build an algorithm of information and a feed to the networks, right? So it's like, and what do I mean by network? What I mean is that influencer has, let's say, 50,000 people. Let's say 20% of those 50,000 people will respond, like, and reshare and send, and then those people resend and share, and then it becomes viral. That's how it works. And that's what feeds the algorithm. That's where they get their data points, and that's how they start to build a personality profile about you to start putting in all these ads for political content based on the things that you're pushing. But they need the thread, right? they need a thread. They need a needle to thread. That's what I'm saying. It through all this content, and influencers were being paid. They may not have known underneath why they were being paid, but there was a lot of like folks that I understood that were being taken advantage of too for being paid content, not knowing their worth or asking why. And this is another episode I'm going to create about creators building a business around their content. Now, you and I both are structured as LLCs for our content and our business, right? So that is what content creators, just in a nutshell, need to start doing to protect themselves, and not just as an LLC, but just as a business, right? Because then you start to put yourself up as a legal entity that you have negotiating room. They see you as a serious business person that you can negotiate a lot of things. And, you know, everybody was saying, well, they just need to be educated. Well, yes, we all need to be educated. They have the power of knowing what you do. And we need to have the power of understanding we need to be protected in not hurting the community with what they want to do. This is my opinion. And then also how we want to structure content that's going to be beneficial.
So I want to clarify something about things that were happening, and it was all factual and true. It wasn't the platforms itself paying us to say something or for us to use clickbaity engagement bait to get a message out there. Those are two very different things. I think you and I could have an entire episode discussing that. But I think it's important to make that clarification, because in our case, it was, this is what's going on. We would like for you to use your platform, and you always get to say yes or no. There were, for example, times when I questioned, like, you're reaching out to me about this campaign, but I don't know how to talk about this. Like, what do you think? And then we went back and forth. I'll give you an example. I was offered a campaign to talk about Cinco de Mayo last year. And I said, I'm not Mexican. I didn't know anything about Cinco de Mayo until I moved here. And they said, no, they really want to work with you. And I had to push back again. And I said, look, the only time I feel comfortable, the only way I would feel comfortable doing this is if the brand is okay with me mentioning, I did not know about Cinco de Mayo until I moved here, and I was very confused. So let's learn together what it is. And so I gathered the data and I explained, and I said, this is the impression that you get about Cinco de Mayo, but this is the reality. It's about La Batalla de Puebla. And like, I educated my community along with myself, and I was comfortable doing that. And so that was a compromise that we arrived at, and it was okay. Otherwise, like, there are things where they have offered me, like, hey, could you talk about this? One time they offered me something about cruise ships and like the fuel. And I said, I'm so sorry. I'm not a cruise person. I know very little about this topic. I am not the right person for this. Like, I think to find a better influencer that can truly, honestly break this down, because they know about it, or they're passionate about taking cruises or not, or I don't know, but it's not going to be me. And it's very different from some of these platforms that will pay creators to get a lot of views. So the way you do it is you create very clickbait or engagement bait content so that you get more views, so you get paid more. And that's, I feel like that's a manipulation of the influencers by the platforms.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. So thank you for clarifying that, in that because the platforms do have budgets for that. And then there's agencies, right? Agencies want to kind of work with me in a free content way. And I'm like, no, you know, because I know there is paid engagement and there are ways to work with content creators like you and I, right? The other thing you touched upon that I think is very interesting is that I'm Mexican, right? Do I speak Spanish? No, but I know all about Cinco de Mayo, right? You were Colombian and they liked your content and you spoke Spanish, but you're not Mexican, right? So let's talk about that for a little bit, right? Because they're like, well, I think this is that idea of brands sometimes have this, like, there's a lot of things that are wrong, right? Culturally, like why they think A all of us are a monolith, right? As they say, but each of us have different segments of the culture, especially our accents, right? So when you did that, was that a problem?
The campaign wasn't in Spanish. I gave them the same video in Spanish for free, by the way. The campaign was in English. So it wasn't the Spanish speaking piece. I think it was that I had my platform geared towards not just Latinos, but I also have a big non-Latino population that wants to learn about Latino issues or Latino perspectives, and I give it to them. And I think that might have been why I would make a good fit, because the Mexicans already know about Cinco de Mayo. The goal of this campaign was to educate people and to reclaim Cinco de Mayo to what it really is about and take it away from this misconception of sombreros, tacos, and margaritas, and people thinking that it's the Mexican Independence Day when it's not. So in that case, they picked probably a fitting audience in my case, but I pushed back initially because I was like, I didn't know anything about Cinco de Mayo until I moved here. And then it was like super confusing. And then I made the video in English and it was, I don't know, I just really liked how they were okay in compromising with me. And I said, you know what? Let's just do it in Spanish too. And I did it both ways. And I posted the English one on Instagram and the Spanish one on TikTok. And the TikTok one did great, which was surprising because TikTok and I don't usually get along.
TikTok, that's a whole other beast, right? So this is another medium that's different. So podcasting is something that can be video. It can be audio. Audio is key always. But the video piece is just watching us talk, but sometimes just audio will work, but we have freedom to say what we want to say. It's not censored. And how you set up your podcast for that is very important. And there's many, you know, multifaceted ways. You know this, I know this. Video for me is a different realm. I do have video content, but it's not like your content. But I'm not the expert, you are, right? And that's why we have to leverage folks like yourself and us to work together to bring the message across, which is why we do this, right? So thank you for being on the show. Before we come to a close, is there anything you want to get into?
There's two things, because we definitely want to use, we want to talk about WhatsApp for a second. I think what you've been saying about engagement is a mistake that I see most people making, because they do not realize that every time that they share a video that looks sketchy, it's like giving it points. It's boosting it up. People don't get that. And I get sent so many DMs of things and I reply. I will not click on that because I'm not going to give it my eyeballs. I will not reward. So what you're doing is rewarding and saying, we love this. Stop doing that. Also, there are good accounts out there that I respect and love about 90% of what I do. What is the 10% that I don't like is when they amplify the bad things to mock it or dispute it. The problem is that once you see that bad thing, that's all your brain thinks about. This is, I don't know if it's a psychologist or a communications expert, maybe he's both. George Lakoff wrote a book called Don't Think of an Elephant. Now, all you're going to do is think of an elephant. That is what happens when you do, even if you're not sharing the post of the original person, but only screenshot something crazy that, for example, Marjorie Taylor Greene said, and you're refuting it, all you're doing is amplifying her message. These platforms you mentioned also, it's very important to highlight, they are not moderated. So whatever you share that spreads like wildfire, there is no moderator or community review thing that says this information is sketchy because of blah, 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 and gives you the things like now you see on Threads or on Twitter. But these things spread like wildfire. And to your point, this is a very important tool for our community. Literally, I run my life on WhatsApp. I have so many different groups where I organize information for myself, with my husband, with the family. Everything runs on WhatsApp. It's the number one app I open in the morning to see what's going on. It's the last app I close before I go to bed. And the use of WhatsApp among the Latino community in the US and obviously outside of the US is extremely high. So not taking that into account when you are trying to reach Latinos is a huge mistake.
So let me ask you, why do they use WhatsApp instead of like Facebook DMs or anything? Why are they?
So WhatsApp was created a long time ago as a competitor to the BlackBerry Messenger. So only the people that had BlackBerry would be able to like communicate with each other. But if you had a phone that was not a BlackBerry, then how would you communicate? That's when WhatsApp came out. And I actually had to pay $1 in the App Store for WhatsApp because that's how long ago I started using WhatsApp. Obviously, it's free now. This is before Facebook acquired it for, what was it? The number is not important. It was a huge, huge, huge amount at the time. But it was a messaging platform that allowed you to communicate with people in other countries for essentially free. For the $1 that you paid for the app, the rest of the communication was free. And for so many of us that are immigrants that have so many connections abroad, this was the way to communicate. And that platform did evolve so much more than other things where they incorporated voice notes, photos, links. You have all the links saved. Teresa mentioned Signal as a competitor. I use Signal a lot, Adam, sorry, but the functionality is way behind WhatsApp. My husband traveled in 2012 for 5 weeks. And because of the time difference, we barely could call each other through WhatsApp, by the way. So we would just leave each other voice notes. So he would send me a voice note. I would send him a voice note. And that's how we communicated for the 5 weeks that he was traveling. So it became essential. A lot of businesses in Latin America run on WhatsApp. Like they would provide their telephone number to the customers and the customers would place the orders or things like that. Everything is with WhatsApp. I have a Colombian dermatologist. I talk to her through my WhatsApp, like everything. So it is very important. It's very, very, very important. I have 106 shared groups with my husband, just to give you an idea. And each group has a different topic. So some are with some family friends, some are other, some we have a group to share, you know, the funny things about your kid, like things that she said that are funny, a group just about that. So we classify it. It's kind of like for people that are not familiar with WhatsApp, it's kind of like your text messaging, group messaging, Slack, and photo, document, and link repository all in one. So it's incredible. The problem, like I said, is that it is not moderated. And with Latinos, what really scares me is that, as Teresa has mentioned, we are targets of misinformation campaigns, and we get the misinformation from two different sides. Mis, dis, and malinformation. Misinformation is when it's accidental. So Teresa, Sophia's party is on Friday. Don't miss it. And it turns out that it was Saturday. That is misinformation. I gave you wrong information, but it wasn't on purpose. Like, unless I'm a jerk and I want you to miss the party, then this was misinformation. Disinformation is when it is with intent. I'm going to give you wrong information, which we saw happened in many different ways around COVID, around elections, in so many different ways. But we're getting it through the people here that use WhatsApp that we communicate with, but also through Latin America, we get the disinformation. And it's very interesting because it's very similar to what we see in the US. So I get the disinformation and all the memes about how, for example, the Colombian government was supposedly giving free IDs to the Venezuelans so that they would vote in the election. That is all false. But what does that sound like? Like the disinformation here about the non-citizens voting. It's all false, but it spreads like wildfire because it's very engagement. It drives engagement through rage and infuriates people. And it's back to your original point. It's us versus them. It's us versus those illegal voters in both cases.
Yeah, no, it that's how everything was. And again, going back to Paula Ramos and her book, she does talk about this. And I also know that the information from, if you haven't seen it on Netflix or wherever, The Social Dilemma, through the first campaign for this administration back in 2016, they understood the power of Facebook in other countries and the data points and how that information went viral. Also in the Philippines, using influencers in the Philippines, when Maria Ressa from Rappler, her media company, broke open how Duarte was using influencers, right, to get his political message out, which is a dictatorship that it turned into in the Philippines. She won the Nobel Peace Prize for talking about that. So it's not like we don't know that other countries will take the information and then feed it back as a, you know, it comes back in a full circle, but bigger. And it's like, what do? We share it and we don't even know if it's true, right? And yes, I mean, this is like women. This is women that are breaking this down, right? And this is what we're doing. Yes.
Speaking of women, I have to plug in an amazing Latina. Roberta Braga is a Brazilian immigrant here in the U.S. She runs something called DDIA, Digital Democracy Institute of the Americas, DDIA.org. I'm sure Teresa will include the link in the show notes. She's an incredible Latina that is doing the work with a team to study digital democracy. She and her team monitor over 1,000 public groups on Telegram and WhatsApp to see the patterns of information that are being spread and what is happening so that we can keep an eye, as well as informing us, the communication nerds, of the ways that we can effectively combat misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. And so I highly recommend that people check her work out because, again, women are doing this work and studying these things. And as far as I know, her team is the only one really studying what's happening all the time with WhatsApp, which to me is very important and a big miss that we've had for a long time, because the right has been using WhatsApp to spread wrong messages that spread around our communities. And unfortunately, we don't have any way to combat it. So it is.
Yeah. No, they wanted to run free. Oh, don't get me wrong. They wanted to run free. They wanted to go as big as, you know, a tidal wave, you know, up to the moon. Because why? Because they get paid. They get paid with advertising clicks. All the advertisers get paid for this. And that's what it's about at the bottom line, is money. We've talked about this. We saw it. All of them standing next to the president, of how they are in alignment. All of them were on the hook for federal lawsuits that were actually started by Trump in the first administration. Then Biden came in and was going to take it further. But now, because of, you know, all this money around AI, they all bonded together and said, let's just make money. You know, like the pet shop boys, you know, I got the brawn, you got the brains, let's make some money. That's exactly what's happening. I'm sorry to go back to the 80s, but that's where it is. And that's where we're going to land. So, I mean, we got to fight this. And it's always women of color. And I don't care. We will do it. And I will die on the hill like that, because women of color. And nobody believes us, right? Nobody is believing women of color. So Sylvia, thank you so much. We can find you at Tono Latino on YouTube. I know you're on LinkedIn under your name, Sylvia Salazar. You have a website also, and you're also on TikTok. You're on all the socials.
Instagram, Substack. I'm theoretically on Snapchat, but I'm not cool enough for Snapchat yet.
You are a marketing political machine, and I love that. And I want to have you back on the show. I think we need to deeper dive into some other things. I know this was like a fire hose of information. We'll whittle it down, but I really enjoyed having you on the show. And we're going to, you know, do some more work together, because this is going to be a long 4 years, and we got it. It's a marathon, not a sprint, which means, like an elite athlete, you got to rest and then you got to get back up and you got to go and you got to go better, right? Harder and faster. So that's what we're going to do. Thank you for your time today, and we'll be in touch. Gracias.
Yes. A ti.
Thank you, Sylvia, for joining us today on Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. We hope that this information resonated with you in how she influences community through the political landscape and actually dissecting what is truthful information from misinformation. She's a huge help, and especially in these upcoming elections that will be coming up, specifically November 4th, yes, on California, and then the primaries that will start in 2026. It's very important how we find our information, and Sylvie is one of these trusted resources that works with other folks in bringing and providing the accurate political landscape in Spanish and in English. And to listen to more conversations like this, you can visit us at latinasb2b.com and follow us on all the socials, specifically YouTube and Instagram. We're also on Blue Sky. If you want to launch your own podcast or sponsor some of these episodes, visit us at latinasb2b.com to learn how to become a partner with us. This episode was produced by Teresa E. Gonzalez of 5E Leadership and Marketing and latinasb2b.com and co-produced by Robert Lopez of cratesaudio.com. Hasta la próxima. Stay loud, stay proud, and stay organized. Gracias.